and
well, strictly speaking,
the amount of abuse I got, I could have.
It wasn't abuse.
I could have signed a sexual workplace. What is it?
Oh, but you really? Loved it
from this man right here.
Oh wow,
you loved it.
Uh huh.
Okay, now
this is my payback for the, blokey, the 3 episodes of.
It was blokey fun, you know. It was that's what Australian blokes do. We
oh, really.
Yeah,
sexual pay each other harassment.
Out. Sexual harassment, totally. Oh, all the time.
I didn't know.
It's completely normal. Oh, everyone does it. John Howard, with his staff, all the time.
Fair enough.
I see.
I love the underwear you're wearing there, Mickey. So, welcome to a capital
trio
talk tech. We are introducing our new hostess with the mostess, Teresa Watts.
Hello.
I'm Andy White, of course. ArcWhite at ArcWhite.org, and we also have Pascal Klein here.
Hey, how's it going?
And he's Klepas at Klepas.org. All of those are our websites as well. So, ArcWhite.org is my website. Klepas.org, TeresaWatts.com. And Teresa, known as Chisa on Twitter, is the originator of the lovely IE voodoo doll.
That's hanging on my... You can't take it
off. That
on.
Is pinned it's to pinned your curtains.
Pinned to my... So it's easier to stick pins into it so it doesn't move around too much.
Which is very important.
Which is important, yeah. And generally what'll... Actually, you should introduce this.
I made an IE voodoo doll out of just some scraps of felt, just being when I felt frustrated when trying to make things work in Internet Explorer 6. I posted up a tutorial online, and it seems to getting a lot of love from web designers and developers all over the world who seem to also like to stab Internet Explorer.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, so the way it works is I'll sit down, I'll start working on a project, and when I start doing IA testing, every single thing that pisses me off gets a stab.
Which is why there's a lot of pins there.
Which is why there's a lot of... I haven't removed my last project.
Not as many as I would have thought, though.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was that I actually did that on last, but it only has one, two, three, four, five, six pins in it at the moment. So six things pissed me off that deserved, yeah, a stab. There's like 20 more sitting at the top of my bookshelf up there that I can...
Just in case.
And I haven't actually done IA testing and IA optimization for Klepas.org yet.
I'm going to put this out there. I think we can safely write IE6 off. Yeah. I think it's time we all moved on and put
so.
That dark period of history behind us.
Yep.
I have clients still telling me that they use IE6 and saying, why is it not working when I haven't tested it properly, or I just kind of thought, maybe I can let it die. But no, there are people who are very firmly clean to it.
I'd link them the fact that like YouTube and a whole bunch of other large sites like Facebook, they're all saying bye-bye IE.
Yep.
Yeah. So if Facebook and YouTube are doing it, then your
website... When did IE6 come out? That was, what, 2002?
Really?
I thought it was earlier than
that. Earlier than that. I can't even remember. But look, it's been long enough.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree. So... Fuck off, IE.
Moving right along. We'll talk about events, stuff that's coming up.
Should we do a proper... I think we should do a proper introduction.
Really. I thought that was a proper introduction. All right,
There weren't enough websites mentioned. I know you have more, so...
You have more?
You have more websites. Well, more than one. You've got your TeresaWatts.com, and then there's CheeGarden, so...
Yeah, I have an online portfolio, which is really in need of updating at TeresaWatts.com. I also have a blog, which is also in need of updating... at cheergarden.com.
Mine too. The last couple of weeks, the only posts have been this podcast.
Well, now I can make a post about this podcast, so I've got something to write about.
You should mention, what do you do?
I'm a freelance web designer. I also do bits of graphic design for print and branding, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just moved to Canberra and moved to freelancing start of this year, and it's going really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
Cool. Which now means that this podcast designer-to-developer ratio is 2-1. Help. Help.
You do some developer stuff.
I do basic development. I do HTML, CSS. I can mess around with PHP, but I can't write it.
It's about as close as I get to PHP as well.
Can we make this a quartet?
Who else do you want to bring in?
I don't know.
Even things up.
We'll have to get some special guests in or something.
Yeah. And there'll be times where we'll interview or visit other people, like the Jameses, and then we'll have like 3 developers. So
I actually really look forward to doing a podcast with them and you.
I'm
going to
get so much shit.
You will get a beating.
Yeah. That'll suck.
Mm.
But it'll be good fun. And they have a sauna. Yes, anyway, moving right along. We'll be talking more about work-related stuff in our main feature. I think we should switch through the next section, which is a focus quickly on event. Oh, actually, no, before we switch, let's just say that we've decided that since we're constantly mentioning email addresses for contact, we're actually build a quick website for the show, and we'll
at some point,
have a dedicated email address for that show, so it'll be show@somethingorother.com or whatever.
Yeah.
So it'd be easier to contact us. So you don't feel guilty when you mail one of us.
And not the rest.
If you want to, you know, say hello to every one of us and give us love. Yeah. So, moving along.
Events. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut your introduction short earlier. So we're not going to mention stuff that we've already mentioned previously, because otherwise this will get to being a very long list.
Mm-hmm.
Only
things that we haven't mentioned that are really interesting, or things that really deserve a mention because something's changed. Otherwise, we'll just point you to, as usual, we'll just either link the Web Standards Group announce mailing list, which has got all the major events in. And there's a new list up that I found today by speaker, developer, whatnot. Guy called Nick Fink, who's put up a whole bunch of user experience events. That's around the world, so it's got Australian stuff, but also stuff based in London and the States. So it's a pretty exhaustive list of user experience related events.
And we'll have that link.
We'll have that link in the show notes. Yep. The only thing that we didn't, I'm not sure.
I've got one. Wait.
Yeah.
Registrations either are or should now be open for the Open Source Developers Conference. Ooh. 2009.
Where's that held?
It's being held in Brisbane. This year.
Sweet.
Sunny, lovely Brisbane.
What time? Or what month?
It's in late November. I forget off the top of my head. I think it was 26th of
November. Brisbane have it like last year or the year
before? They had it in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 2007. So it's back to Brisbane. But OSDC 2007 was really cool. We had a lot of really cool people there, and Brisbane's got a lot of...
mentioned briefly really OSDC good. Actually is
the Open Source Developers Conference.
Okay.
Yes, so basically it's a conference for open source developers. They end up getting people from all over the world. You know, there's Google engineers, there's various people from Yahoo, all the big players, all the little players, and everyone gets together and
has a merry time,
and we do presentations on various things that are cool and coming up in the open source development world.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Good point. Actually, I didn't have that on the list. So next up, the only other event that's really worth mentioning, and I don't think we mentioned it last time, was UX Australia, User Experience Australia. So a Canberra-based user experience conference. I think it's the first user experience conference in Australia, so that should be kind of cool. That's actually on next week, on the 26th to the 28th. With the 27th and 28th being the main conference day, it's like main presentation days, and then they've got like mini workshop, half day workshops the 2 days before that. And registrations are open till on the day.
Oh, great. So it's not too late.
It's too late to get your cheap ticket. Full tickets are $700 for the entire thing. So it's not, but there's a bunch of good stuff happening. I mean, if you're a full-time student, hooray! You get a discount of $400. You get it for $300, so that's way cool. Jeez.
Christ!
Yes. Thank fuck for studying. And then
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say those words.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like a temporary thing. Like it's a yay, I'm studying. Oh, thank Christ for studying. And then the week after, I'll get my assessment pieces, and I'll be like, oh fuck. Yeah. So don't expect to hear those words out of me again for a while to come.
I have two words for you: macro economics. Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's what I'm avoiding by ditching the echo now. if you don't want to come along to the whole thing, you can pay, I think, a bit less, and you get to go along to, like, the half-day workshops, if that's the only thing you're interested in. But otherwise, yeah, so we'll link that in the show notes, and of course the list of other user experience events around the world, and yeah, otherwise we'll link the Web Stance group announce list again if you missed events in Australia last time.
I guess we just dive straight into what we're going to be discussing.
Main topic, sure.
Main topic. So the theme for today is sort of our business experiences and things that we've learnt from our various jobs as developers and or designers.
We've got a whole range of different experiences, well, represented amongst the three of us here.
So, yeah, we figured it might be useful for some people to listen to. If you're after anything heavily technical, now's probably time
to switch.
Switch off.
Those with propeller heads glued to their heads.
And come back later. Yep. We're going to be talking about business stuff for the most part.
But I think it's useful advice. I mean, come on, you guys want to make a living, so... And this is stuff not only for, like, freelancers. It's got a bit of everything in there for you, so...
It does. Well, let's get to it.
Yeah, sure.
Who's starting? I'll start this one, I suppose. Okay, so up until the end of last year, I was running a company, Looking Glass Solutions, which was started by my business partner, Evan Laybourne, as a software development house. Actually, it was started as something completely different, but that was way, way, way back in the dark annals of history.
Aerospace.
No. Something. It started off as a company for... He was doing something with software at university... redistributing open source stuff in useful little compilation CDs.
Yeah, like that would have gained traction.
He sold a few of them, but it ultimately wasn't what he really wanted to be doing. It was just a bit of fun. But that company ended up becoming Looking Glass Solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So we started, when I first started there, we were working on one really awesome project. It was called Got It. It was a web-based digital asset management system. And when I talk about assets there, I'm talking about photographs and sound files, that sort of thing.
This would be for like a professional photographer, you know, who goes out, does like a shoot and wants to import like, you know, an entire camera full of high-quality
stuff. Full of high-quality stuff.
Do the proofing and...
Well, more importantly, managing the metadata.
Managing the metadata.
Cool. Being able to tag things, you know, constructing taxonomies of terms. And that was really great. It was cool. It ended up being a really awesome project. Unfortunately, in 2006, I think it was 2006, the funding for that dried up a little bit.
At least the development funding, right?
The development funding. So, unfortunately, we had to step away from that one. And it left us in a bad position because we'd been...
Didn't have anything else lined up.
We didn't have anything else lined up.
Mm.
We had a few little dribs and drabs of work, a lot of system administration stuff just to keep us ticking over. But it wasn't what we really wanted to be doing. So we made the decision, which in hindsight was probably a little bit foolhardy, that we would continue the business and go looking for more work. And we picked up, you know, lots of little web development jobs.
Yep. Little chunks, the 2K projects.
Most of them were in the 3K range. There were a couple of bigger ones.
But they were worth much more time-wise.
Yeah,
there
well...
There were headaches to do. We picked up, like, three or four of them at a time.
We tended to find clients who had relatively high demands and relatively low budgets, which is not a great place to be in. You don't want that. You want one nice big project that's, you know, $400,000 and keeps you going for years and years. And you can, you know, you can sit down and do a really good job and get passionate about that one project.
Yeah. That's what I found, too, is all the little jobs that I did. I mean, I worked as a in-house designer for LGS, Looking Glass Solutions, but on my contract basis, which suited me well because I was still studying at the time. And, well, the thing that sucked about it was, you know, one day I'd do this little job, but the budget was so low that I only had, like, a couple of hours to stick to that project. And I didn't have enough time to get passionate about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, to really do all the things that I really wanted to do or what I thought would be the high-quality job.
Yeah.
Which sucked, yeah.
But, I mean, I guess in a lot of ways that's a reflection of the sort of businesses we were marketing to, and that's probably one of the big mistakes we made,
mm-hmm.
was that we spent a lot of time marketing to other businesses as opposed to schmoozing government.
Yeah, that's true. Government tenders.
Even tenders are... Tenders are... Okay, so we did, I think, 6 tenders at mm-hmm. Looking Glass Solutions.
How many did you win?
None. We came very, very close on 2 of them,
mm-hmm.
But they are a ridiculous amount of work for a small company. Mm-hmm. Each one of them would take about 2 or 3 weeks of full-time work to put together properly.
Yeah. You want to quickly mention what a tender is? Mm. I know some people don't know what
that
is.
I honestly don't completely understand what a tender is.
I didn't either until someone explained to me. I had idea what the hell it was, yeah.
Right, so the Australian government have a process in place if they need to spend money on a project that's going to cost over $80,000.
Right.
I think it's $80,000. Because of all the rules about accountability on government departments, they have to put the job out to what's called tender. So there's a big list that everyone can subscribe to called the Oztender... Well, it's a website, the Oztender website, which has a mailing list and an auto-emailer that will tell you when tenders come up.
We'll put it in the show notes.
We will. And basically, you have to do a great big response to this, you know, 40 or 50 page document. Your response ends up being on the order of about 100 pages, typically. And you have to detail how you're going to do the project, who's going to be involved, how the money's going to be spent, what the timeline is, what any legal issues are.
So it's like a huge proposal.
It's a ridiculous proposal. You've got to go into crazy amounts of detail. Mm. That's understandable because this, you know, it's the Australian government, it's taxpayers' money, they're mm-hmm. spending a lot. But as a general rule, when somebody puts something out to tender, they've already got someone in mind for that job. They've already done the investigation. They've found a provider. And a lot of the time, they're just going through the motions. So it's...
To make it seem legit, basically.
Not to make it... I mean, if somebody came up with a superior alternative,
yeah.
more often than not, you know, that they would get a look
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
But there are certain prejudices in the minds of people who work in these departments.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to favour Microsoft solutions or Sun solutions.
Mm. Previous service providers.
Anything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really complicated process. We spent a lot of money writing tenders and got nothing back for it.
But on the other hand, had we landed one, how large were money-wise?
All of these tenders were in the $400,000 to $500,000 range.
Could have kept LGS going quite a nicely.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been that
so
one.
It's potentially worth.
It's a gamble.
It's
if
a gamble.
You get it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a gamble depending on how large you are as a company.
Yeah.
If you have money and resources and time to have someone, you know, looking over the Oztender lists on a weekly basis and writing a proposal once a month maybe on something and then landing like 1 in 6 of those proposals that while you've also got other work or you have an existing 400, 500, whatever K project on your hands, then that's easily.
Well, there's companies out there that's how they make their money.
Yeah, that's what they're doing job-wise.
They start out with a little bit of funding and they hire some tender writers and that's where they start. And all they do is land one tender a year worth, you know, maybe $1.5 million
mm-hmm.
or maybe 2 of those a year, and that keeps the whole company going.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, anyway, as you can probably tell, we found ourselves in a situation where we had some cash flow issues. We'd never managed to, as a business, save a lot of money when we were working on our first project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were just happy living from day to day sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have a war chest, and we got into a position where we had to do everything we could just to stay afloat, which meant,
personal sacrifices at times.
It meant some ridiculous personal sacrifices. Because
you guys weren't incorporated, so the entire business rested on you and Evan.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was a 3-year period where I didn't take a holiday longer than 2 weeks, longer than 1 week. There were Christmases where I didn't get paid for 2 months. We got, you know, we were desperate for a lot of the time,
yeah.
you know, but that said, you know, we did reasonably well. It's just that we'd have these awful, awful cash flow issues where we'd be flush with cash for a little while and we'd catch up with all our bills and expenditures.
Yep.
and then we'd be back to zero.
I want to mention that we had a decent lifestyle. Like, we weren't living out of cardboard boxes.
Oh, God, no.
We had fun. We had parties time. And, you know, we went out and had beer o'clock every Friday. And
spent
a lot
more money than I probably should at the local cafe.
We added that up. It was like a ridiculous, like, it's
but
like
the food is just so good.
2 to 4K a year, you know. Arrive in the morning for a coffee.
I wasn't that bad.
Oh, if we add the food up.
There were certainly people in the company spending.
Well, put it this way, we actually sat down and discussed should we get an espresso machine for the office, right? Because we all like coffee. And we decided against it because
Too hard.
Too messy. And we wanted to get fresh air. It was like a time to leave the office environment and chill. Like, we'd still definitely talk about work quite often, but it was just a different...
Brain break, right?
You get some fresh air, see some trees, hear some birds flying around and chirping and whatnot, and yeah, plus the waiter's hot.
I'm going to leave that one alone. Yes, some of them certainly are. We ended up in a situation where we were doing a lot of work that wasn't necessarily great.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up doing a lot of sysadmin work to try and make ends meet.
Yep.
And we opened a training room, which was initially quite lucrative and worked very, very well until we had a series of rather nasty storms here in the ACT.
Night was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I walk out. I was doing an interview for something. I think it was a Linux Australia podcast. And hung up the phone, wanted to switch on the lights and walk outside. And I opened the door, and there was a torrent of water coming down the skylight between the training room and the main office.
Yeah,
and I could see Ashley on the other side running to switch off the power mains because the water was gushing into the office.
Yeah. So basically there was a supercell storm, really massive, big cloud.
Yeah, and the ANU, which is the Australian National University, they got flooded. They had to call off classes for like a week. It was crazy.
Oh, they had to rebuild one of their buildings.
Yeah, wow. It was just nuts. I think what happened was there was... going into a rat hole here, we had a hail came down and got into the gutters and filled up the gutters, and then the water that followed couldn't drain.
So it drained into our office into our lovely new training room, which was obliterated.
We rescued the computers, but the room was gone basically.
We had to get the landlord to fix it up, and that was a process that took about, I think it was 4 months before it was back up and running. And by that time, we'd lost too much, what's the word I'm looking for? Too much momentum. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
So, we were doing everything, and I was director and developer and system administrator and marketing person and phone answering person and occasional bookkeeper, and it was just a nightmare. You know, I was doing a million things at once
Can't get in the flow. You'll get a phone call and then someone in the office has got to stop working on whatever they're working on, pick it up.
Nightmare.
So really needed a focus.
Yep.
Yeah.
What we needed was one project that we could keep working on. And if we had had a little bit more money behind us, we would have been a bit freer to say no to some of the work that came our way. I mean, realistically, what we should have done is taken stock of our financial situation and just gone, we need to change the way we're working.
Yeah.
And really rapidly reduced our expenses.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying, Pascal?
No.
Oh, okay. We tried some little experiments in outsourcing. We outsourced a couple of jobs to
China.
A friend of a friend in China. And that ended up being... it worked reasonably well. No, it was a Drupal
CSS
template.
Markup and some PHP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stuff we got back wasn't the highest quality, but it wasn't bad. The guy knew what he was doing. And
His tables a tiny bit, but not too much.
Yeah. He charged us we paid him an amount that was
that you could not have paid someone other than a student in Australia to get the same.
It was a lot less than we would have paid someone over here, but it was still quite generous by outsourcing rates.
Yeah.
So that was, I think if we could do the whole thing again, we would probably make better use of outsourcing.
Yep.
I had and still have an ethical qualm with outsourcing a lot of the time.
I personally don't do it. I would never do it. I'd have to, never say never. I, at the moment, could never see myself doing it.
But why? Why do you say that?
Because either A, the things that I can do, I will not outsource because I'll do them myself because I enjoy doing them, okay. Right? Generally.
Yeah, fair enough.
I won't let myself in for a job that there are things that I don't like doing that I can do. So I try to avoid that, right? If there are things I can't do, then I'll usually recommend someone else to do them. Like, we had one job recently, as in Teresa and I, and, I could potentially have done the WordPress theme, like, the design integration of making this WordPress theme, but I don't like dabbling, like, just I mentioned with my site, I really don't like dabbling with PHP, and I knew that there are many other people who would be, A, better at it, and quicker at it, so I figured, why not pass that on to someone else? And I have many friends and network. Like people in my network.
Yeah, there's always somebody.
There's always someone else, right? And they're usually a colleague or a friend that, well, sure, why not pass the work that they probably enjoy doing? Well, you wouldn't have picked it up hadn't you enjoyed doing it, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Why bother outsourcing if a friend or a colleague can do that work at a good quality and make some money off it?
Firstly, that assumes that you have a friend or colleague who can do that work.
Yeah, that's true.
And I have been in situations before where I've outsourced work to either friends or friends of friends or acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't gone well.
That's true, yeah.
Because, they've had a limited amount of time that they could devote to the project and, as is always the way in software development, thought they could do a certain amount of work and not been able to follow through.
Yeah. Well, actually, as a note, working with friends is a fine line of...
It can work.
But it can also fail really badly fuck up your friendship. Yeah.
Luckily, that's never happened to me. Outsourcing to China is inexpensive. I'll put it out there.
Can I ask a question? I actually don't know this, because while I work more as a contractor, I never saw books or anything, really. Did you charge the hourly rate that you would have done this at, and then build a client for that?
Hell yes.
You did?
Hell yes.
So you guys made a good profit by outsourcing it to China.
It was a job that the client didn't have a huge budget to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave them an initial quote, which we thought was quite reasonable. And
so there's a handshake in there.
I can't remember which client that was, actually. You know, it might have been that particular client.
I think it was.
Anyway,
Yes, it was.
If it is that particular client, then I have absolutely no qualms about charging them what I did.
Fair enough.
Because, they've ended up not treating us very well, shall we say. So it was a lowball quote to start with, and we were overworked at the time, and this guy that we outsourced to was, like I said, a friend of a friend. Mm-hmm. One of our employees had a friend in China who wanted a little bit of extra work. And he actually set the rate that he was going to work for. Mm-hmm. So, we were pretty happy with that. And yes, we wouldn't have made a profit on that project if we hadn't done that.
Yeah.
So it was worthwhile there. And I think if I was in a similar position, I would make better use of outsourcing, just because I now know the ramifications of failure.
Mm. But can I ask, would you have outsourced to someone you didn't know in China if you didn't have that friend of a friend?
There's ways and means to find good companies to outsource work to, using stuff like, God help me for saying this, Elance or Odesk or the like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hit and miss.
Mm.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite hard, because I know people who have used contract people. I think it was in India, this particular one. And sometimes it was okay, sometimes it just didn't come back in time, or it didn't come back what they said they would do or what they were asked to do.
Quality or something.
It was just and a lot of issues in terms of communication, just not understanding what was actually needed. So yeah. I suppose it's quite risky in a way, but it can be
It's
good in a way.
I found communication issues because I wrote the email to this guy in China, and I gave simple, like, specific. I was like, you know, you can do the menu this way, and it's really easy, and we prefer you to use this technique because of such and such reason. And then the work we got back did not do it that way.
Yeah. Which may be because he didn't understand what you said.
Yeah, so there were communication issues. Yeah.
A lot of outsourcing companies do have staff who are quite fluent in English.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got to find the right one to work with. And one of the things that I've certainly heard about anecdotally is when you are communicating with them, you have to be very specific in what you want.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, break it down into as small as possible steps. And, well, I mean, obviously without doing the work yourself. And then ask them to acknowledge what you've said in their own words. Mm-hmm. And that's a good way to make sure that they've understood what you've sent.
I think one thing that's worth doing is having a phone call, if you can.
If you can, yeah.
Yeah.
Outsourcing can work if you make it work. It's just, there are risks involved, and I certainly wouldn't do it for a big project where there was a lot of money on the line. I might do it for a small portion of a big project.
Mm. Well, I'm hesitant to do it because of my own reputation. Like, I don't want to have...
But you're a designer.
Yeah. So, this... Oh, of course, we're in a different... The Teresa and I are in a completely different situation. At the moment, we're both freelancers, essentially. Whereby my reputation... Like, as a freelancer, would you agree? Our reputation is pretty much everything.
It's completely related to your identity. And
it's
not attached to a business name. It's attached to you as a person. So, it's... I suppose there's a lot more to it. It's a bit more important. And I suppose, with outsourcing, I don't think I would like to do it, especially with something that I can do, simply because of that quality. I'm very fussy with how I do things and like to get it to a certain standard. And if it's anything below that standard, then it upsets me.
I consider you a perfectionist. But like, I find myself quite often in sort of similar mindset that, I want the work that I give out and have really high quality.
Especially if you're used to doing everything yourself, it's really hard to relinquish that kind of control.
Yeah, so actually on another question, do you have any ethical sort of issues in outsourcing?
I suppose I haven't really thought about it too much.
Can of worms. Can of worms. Yeah, it is a can of worms.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose on one hand, do you mean in terms of the amount that you're charging?
Yeah, that you'd be probably charging a lot less and that... Like, you could do what LGS did in terms of...
It's relative.
It's relative, but you could easily, like... Now, so the two options are, you outsource, and say, for example, the person you're outsourcing to, that's half the price of if you would be doing the work yourself, or if someone in Australia, he was doing the work. And you charge the client, not... You don't add it on an overhead, so you don't charge as if you were doing it here. You were charging the amount of money that this person is requiring, and no overhead, nothing on top, right? Or
it's called making a profit.
Yeah.
Or do you go and make a profit? Then where's the ethic? Like,
I think that's just business. I mean, if it is at a lower standard, then obviously, especially if it's something like design, you wouldn't feel comfortable charging at that kind of rate. But if it's essentially the same kind of thing, I think that's just business.
I guess it depends though. For me, it depends on the overhead. If you're charging like 200%, then I'd say no.
Well, I mean, the HTML we got back from our outsourcing experiment wasn't terrible. You know, it was reasonably straightforward. And the work he did in Drupal, because he did do a little bit of work on the Drupal backend as well, wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. But for the kind of money we had for that project...
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to do what he did in the amount of time... And make that project profitable.
But the ultimate lesson here is don't pick up tiny little crappy projects that pay you a small amount of money and leave you feeling crap because you couldn't do the job that you wanted to really do.
Like Walk away.
No one to say no.
Yeah.
That's
a big one.
Yeah.
I think that even applies to us.
Oh, like, yeah.
I've put down a couple of clients. We'll get more into that later.
I'm terrible at saying no to work. Yep. And...
Same. I'm starting to learn, though, after... a few months of working every evening and weekend and things for a while. Sometimes you have to say no. And if you have enough work, then you can afford to be a little bit picky.
Yeah.
On that note, thank you for coming along.
Oh, no problem.
I know that we're all pretty fracking busy.
Yes, well,
finding time to now get the three of us into the same room in an evening together is harder than getting just two of us.
I'm leaving for Europe in 2 weeks, and I've got...
Don't worry, we'll continue the show.
4 contracts. Oh, I'm gonna die!
Okay, so, moving on. Do you want to cover hiring briefly or not?
No, we might skip that one for now. I'm probably just going to summarise and go into the lessons learnt. So, the big things you should take away from the adventure that was Looking Glass Solutions. Yes, I've got my politician's hat on there. The opportunity that was Looking Glass Solutions.
The opportunity.
Number one, focus.
Yeah.
Do something, do it well, and know when to say no to things that will distract you from your mission.
Yep.
Number two, know when to fold them. Know when to give up. Mm. Be very aware, if you're running a business, of your financial state, or if you're working as a freelancer, your own financial state.
Mm.
And know when you just have to give up and bite the bullet and do something different. Don't be like me and just be dogged and stubborn and hold on right to the very bitter end.
Yep. If you're losing sleep over it, something's going wrong.
If you're, it's natural to lose a bit of sleep over a business. You know, it's a stressful sort of.
Okay, if you're losing sleep over it for months in a row.
If you're losing sleep over it for years in a row, then it might be time to.
Yeah.
If possible, have dedicated positions. At the very least, have somebody to do your marketing and sales, and ideally answer the phones to keep your developers
having
and
developers
productive people
answer
busy.
The phone sucks.
Sucks. Oh, yeah. Royal.
Yeah, I think we would find the same thing.
Well, yeah, you lose your flow. I mean, you need to be able to work on something, and you get into the flow. And if something breaks that, then you have to start again, sort of.
Mm. Actually, I generally have a rule is I only communicate with clients via email because that way we have records.
I really try
don't
to
use
do that, yeah.
I don't use IM. IM is a big no-no. No internet instant messaging for IM. And we have regular coffee / in-person meetups.
Face-to-face.
Yeah.
Face-to-face meetups. And there are calls, but they're pre-organized. Even if they're like an hour or two organized in advance, like if there's an email that comes in the morning and says, can we have a chat today? Then I'll go, sure, look at my calendar. I'll go put you in at 2 p.m. And then have a chat then, but not like they know my mobile number, but if they call me while I'm working, unless like they're really awesome.
You won't answer it.
I won't answer it. Especially if I'm working on something. Because, well, that chances are that chat will turn in. It don't, and it, like, takes up, as in, sorry, it not only stops me from, like, cuts into my work, like, breaks me from, you know, the flow I'm in. But the other thing it does is that can be a 5-minute conversation, that can be a 30-minute conversation.
Yeah.
And that's 30 minutes of your time gone.
Yeah.
It's like, that's hard, like, what, you know, that's like $35 of my hour.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, $35. I charge roughly on the order of about $70 an hour ish. So, yeah, that's $35 gone. And you can't. I find it hard to charge them, to have the guts to charge them for that.
And you still have a record of it, so you don't really know exactly what they asked you if you have to remember it later and you didn't scribble your notes properly.
Not at all. I'd flip that around and I'd say you should be charging for those phone calls.
Okay.
Charge them through the nose. They'll learn the lesson very quickly.
Yeah, and they'll worship your time.
Yeah.
No, good point.
Have somebody to answer your phone. If you can't do that, there are virtual, receptionists. Virtual receptionists you can use who will take the calls for you, screen them, send you an email saying such and such called on this subject.
I haven't thought of that. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. They're generally fairly reasonably priced, and they're manned usually 24/7. Or you know, local business time.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be good just because anyone who calls your work number gets through to an actual human and doesn't interrupt you.
Yep.
And the final lesson, have a war chest. Have some savings.
Buffer.
Don't try to live on nothing. You know, don't bank on... Have some money there in case things don't go well. Even as a freelancer.
And you should have that all the time. Even if times are good, always have some money put away just in case. next month or the month thereafter, or even next year at some point.
Because you never know when a global financial crisis is going to hit.
Yeah. So the next bit I wanted to, before hitting freelancer territory, I was thinking of just covering in-house designer positions, or sorry, not designer, in-house positions, which Teresa and I have both experienced. I as working for LGS as a contract in-house designer, and you working for...
University of Western Australia, or a small centre which is part of that. It was very complicated. I never completely understood our relationship, but mostly doing University of Western Australia work. Mm-hmm.
And you were as a full-time...
As a full-time designer.
In-house designer. Okay, cool. Yep. So I think the points here are that, well, you've got focus and structure in that position, but not necessarily always in a good way.
Yeah, if you're working for something like a university or even just a particular business, you have quite a rigid branding structure and that kind of thing. And if you're working on certain projects... the people that you're working with might not necessarily want you. They might want something specific and different and interesting, but you can't necessarily do that. So it can be quite restrictive in terms of what you're able to do, especially as a designer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really give you a lot of choices, which can feel quite annoying at times.
Mm-hmm.
I also found that working with the same branding, the same kind of thing, the same kind of websites, it gets quite boring after a while. I like to really mix it up and see different things, and I found that was sort of lacking working in that job.
I think
job.
It depends on the position. When I worked for LGS, there were lots of these little tiny projects, and it was a constant shift all the time, like at one point every week, and at other points every month, depending on the work and when it came in. But they're all little tiny projects, and that's more of all comes down to the lack of focus, really, in terms of having one really cool project.
Well, and
less of something that directly pertains to in-house design. That's what I mean. Yeah.
It was good experience at the end, because that was my first full-time job. I was fresh out of university. I hadn't actually studied design or web stuff at all.
Hmm.
I studied computer science, but decided I wanted to be a designer. So
not quite alone on the show.
So when I started there, I didn't have a huge amount of experience, and I definitely gained that, especially because I was because I started as the centre which I was working at started. I was in control of a huge amount of things, and when people came later on, I was part of managing them and telling them what to do and managing accounts and things like that. So there was a lot of experience there, which was extremely useful. I wouldn't have been able to start as a freelancer fresh out of university with no experience, no portfolio.
Hmm.
So it was a good experience, really.
I can echo that. Like, I was still in college when I started working with you guys, and no way could I have gotten the knowledge or the guts to start working as a private contractor, like freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, practically held my hand for like a year, basically. Not held my hand in terms of designing, but held my hand in terms of just like in that working in that environment, like businessy type stuff.
You
helped me write my first invoice to you guys. So yeah.
I got that too, actually. Yeah. So yeah.
No. It's definitely useful. Yeah. So. Good experience, nonetheless. And I think that pertains to anything. Like, no matter, your first job is always going to be a really good experience.
And you learn so much more. I mean, I didn't actually study web design or anything like that formally, but just from generally talking to people and what I've seen, I now tutor at University of Canberra in terms of web design type things.
Mm.
And from what I've discovered, you learn so much more on the job than you do in university or in classes.
Mm.
Or doing tutorials or whatever. It's just so much more a real experience. Mm. Definitely.
There's only so far that theory goes.
Experience trumps a qualification any day.
Absolutely.
Yep. Got no formal qualification.
Yep.
None whatsoever at the moment. I looked at the uni courses that I was going to be doing, as in like the new media arts and sort of web design related courses. And, I mean, I don't want to trump myself in any way here, but a lot of the things that are on that list, I could already do.
I was the same. I after I decided I wanted to be a designer, I looked into doing a course in graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked at the course, it was things that I was already capable of doing.
Yeah.
And when I looked at some of the graduate work, obviously quite a lot was a high quality, but some of it was beneath what I was doing at that stage already. So
I mean, now you're lecturing tutoring at the University of Canberra. You're tutoring web design students without a formal qualification.
She's got a degree.
Not a formal qualification in the subject area that you're teaching, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I think this is not just, we're not like two special cases. I think there's a lot of people out there.
It's quite common.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, getting a degree just shows that you have the capability to sit down and focus on something for a number of years.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is the main reason why I'm studying at the moment. Yeah. Personal interest and, well, to get a degree on paper, as the saying goes.
The flip side of qualifications is, at LGS we had a rule, after several experiences, that we would generally not hire anyone who was doing a master's in information technology or computer science.
Doing a master's at the time?
Anyone that was doing a master's at the time. What we found was that invariably they were students at the ANU who knew a lot of theory and had no practical experience whatsoever.
Okay.
And they did not interview well, and they certainly didn't show us code that we were comfortable hiring somebody for. Mm. I mean, this is people doing a master's degree.
Whew. Yeah, wow. Okay.
I suppose if you're in university for that long, you don't necessarily have as much of a taste of a real working environment.
Yeah,
so
actually,
it's quite hard.
To add on to that, the course that the ANU offered was teaching technologies that were 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, yeah. The class that I was tutoring last semester, it had only recently been revised to transition from teaching web design as how to drag things around in Dreamweaver.
Oh God!
Yes. To what the new revamped unit was, I got to teach them how to actually write HTML and CSS.
Jeez.
Right from the start. So they actually had to learn all these things. And most of these were graphic design students, so they weren't completely comfortable with it. They're used to print, but so many were really, really happy with it in the end, and they actually managed to do a lot more with it than dragging things around in Dreamweaver.
Yep.
So it takes a while to get up to date. I mean, this was just this year.
Yeah, well, if in an industry that moves so quickly, the people who teach that at a university level need to constantly, like, they need to, in their spare time, like, you can't rely on a university lecturer of once every 4 or 5 years going back.
Updating
material.
Not in this day and age.
No, you need to, like, I know Stephen Dan, who does social media and marketing stuff at ANU, right? In his spare time, he's a social media marketing nutter.
Yeah.
In a good way, right?
Yeah.
Who, in his own spare time, spends, like, a lot of, you know, in the evenings or whatever. He's got an iPhone strapped to his wrist at all times, basically.
Yeah, I saw that.
Making laser and gun sounds and whatnot. But yeah, the point is that, you know, he's out there in his own spare time, staying up to
doing it, basically.
And I think
it is quite hard, though, especially because don't these courses and things have to be approved or
something
or other?
There are.
So it's a bit hard to go through.
There's a
process to actually get it. I mean, I'm sure there's a certain amount of leeway that you can sort of get things in there without necessarily going through the whole process, but it's quite difficult. So even if the people who are in the teaching side of things are up to date and willing to teach these kind of things, it might be a bit hard to get that through into classes.
And actually, I went for an interview process, like I had to go through an interview to get into this course at the ANU, and I actually didn't. And they told me that this course might not be for you. I was showing them the God at Work that I was doing, and they were impressed. And then they reviewed the course, and they scrapped it a year after. So I would not have been able to complete the course anyway, because they scrapped it 1 year in.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was like the 40 students that signed up, they had to switch courses or do something else.
Oh, God.
So that really sucked. So had I even gone through with it, I wouldn't have been able to finish that course.
Wow.
So that blows. Anyway, out of that rat hole, even though it was a good one.
It was a good fun one.
Yeah.
It was a good fun one, yeah. So let's move to sort of a mini agency micro business. I haven't had much experience. This is sort of more.
After leaving my job at UWA, I moved on to working for a friend of mine who runs Monk Media.
With or for?
For. So he'd already started the business. He actually has a similar background to me. He started out as a... he did a computer science degree, decided he liked design better, figured it out for himself, started in freelancing and ended up starting a business. At the point when I joined him, it was just him by himself in an office, but he hired me to work for him and, had a nice little business with a huge amount of small projects, but I always found it quite interesting. There was always something new to work on, and I like that sort of variation,
mm-hmm.
even if it, I suppose, kind of lacks focus a bit. But mm-hmm. it was definitely really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had a lot of commercial clients, it was quite different to the work that I was doing at EWA, mm-hmm. which I found really interesting because I got to see a different side of design and do a different type of work,
mm-hmm.
which was really, really great. And I suppose working for, because Paul is a really great designer, so working for someone who is such a, who has so much more experience, especially coming from a similar background as I had, was a really, really great experience because I got to see how he worked. I got to hear his suggestions to my own designs, and I learnt so much from that. So it's a really, really great experience.
Sort of like having a mentor.
It was pretty much, yeah. Mm. And because I was friends with him before working for him, it was always a really good working environment and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, it was definitely quite interesting.
Plus, you got to vet your work, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, not me personally, but if the client wasn't particularly appropriate for our setup or there was some kind of likely issue,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah, I suppose he wouldn't.
No, cool.
He knew how to say no.
Yeah, yeah. He also knew how to find clients, which was definitely interesting to watch, like somebody would come in to repair our air conditioning and we'd end up designing something for them. Or he'd go into some random cool boutique and convince them they need a website. So it was really great. And we always had a lot of really interesting websites in terms of, you know, photographers and designers and architects and boutiques and pubs and that kind of thing. So it was really interesting work. I'd probably still be there, but I had to move to Canberra because my partner got a job here, which is why I decided to transition to freelancing.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually...
good segue.
Good segue, yeah. Which I'm about to break.
Why? Why? It was a brilliant segue! Oh,
I had an awesome idea. The idea of, like, just going up to, like, a business or something, going, hi, new website, talk to us, kind of, you know... going at being active and finding clients. We're thinking of that for Gus's or a cafe, but then we realised that we're probably putting their own kids, their own staff through college there that we wouldn't have
to. Yeah, they could have just given us free lunches and balanced out.
plus they were having enough customers anyway.
And I did ask them about that, and you know, they did sort of say that they couldn't really see the benefit of a website, and I honestly had a great deal of trouble even considering how to convince them otherwise, because, I mean, what are you going to do on a cafe's website? I guess you could see their menu. Yeah.
I like when cafes and restaurants have websites, because I like to look it up before I go. And
they're slowly being made redundant by a couple of web services that are coming out, like menu and review services.
I'm looking at their website.
That's true, but on the other hand, that...
And I mean, if somebody inside the company is particularly passionate about technology, they might have a blog or something, which might just add an extra dimension to...
yeah, I know something.
But more likely than not...
having a bit of history, especially somewhere like Gus's.
Gus's, yes, but more likely than not, most cafe websites I've come across, in my experience, have been pretty crap.
That's true.
I think Gus's is a special case, though, because they do have a lot of history.
They are
a special case.
They have a lot of... that's the first cafe in Canberra that had outdoor seating. Yeah. In Australia. Might have
been in Australia.
In Australia, yeah.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yep. Okay. What's his name? Gus. Gus's or Gustav or... no,
I forget his
name. I think it's a...
he wrote letters to the Queen, basically.
Yeah, he... that was pretty crazy. And the government would come along on a weekend and tear down what he'd built outside.
And he'd put it back over the
next weekend, yeah. But you get... thinking this is an era where there were horses outside and a dust road.
Oh, I don't think it was quite.
No, it was.
It was like the 1960s and 70s. We weren't...
you sure?
Yes.
Are you very sure?
Yes, I'm quite certain.
Okay, I've got to check that out. I could be wrong.
I don't think there were horses running around town.
I think that was part of the issue. There was like a health and safety or that's what the
I think there was something on the books.
Okay.
Because of that. Okay. Yeah.
I have to check it out. Whatever. So...
But I believe the automobile had become quite popular by that time.
Yeah. Freelancing. My pathetic segue attempt.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. That was totally awesome.
Sigh.
I don't feel ripped off at all. Freelancing!
Yeah, so, although my move to freelancing from... Sorry, Pascal. We're kind of closing up. No more work now.
Hey, I went through the same thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. So, it's not exactly... That's what everyone went through. For me, the move wasn't really stressful because, well, I was living at home, still am. I started studying uni. Yeah, I had no money issues, really.
By contrast, I was living out of home, had to pay rent, broke, stressed out, and only had a few little bits and pieces of work to call upon.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad times. So I went to Thailand for a month.
Oh. And
chilled.
I wasn't quite totally broke, but I was after that trip.
But it was worth it.
Mm. Totally anyway, worth it.
Coming back to it, the move you would have been quite different, I'm guessing, to freelancing.
Sort of. I started picking up, because people kept offering me work, even though I was working full-time, I kept getting offered bits of freelance work. So I took on a little bit just on the side, which my boss was quite supportive of, because I was obviously operating in a slightly different space with much smaller projects,
mm-hmm.
Which worked out pretty well. And then I ended up towards the end of last year getting to a point where I had too much freelance work to continue that and work full-time,
mm-hmm.
which I took as a good sign.
Mm.
So I decided, I had already applied for a bunch of jobs for the move to Canberra,
mm-hmm.
and I had got a couple had gotten back to me, a couple had offered me jobs, but I decided that freelancing had been going pretty well, so I'd give it a shot. I wasn't extremely confident, I didn't necessarily expect it to go really well, but I thought it would be a good opportunity to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still young, I had quite a big amount of savings. At that time, I was not going to be living at home anymore, so I do have to pay rent and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's not a huge amount. I didn't have a mortgage, I don't have anybody to support. So I figured this is the best time to really give freelancing a shot.
Yep.
Especially because I had to leave my current job. So, yeah. So it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It was stressful in the sense that it was really going into something new. A lot of people friends and family were quite concerned, especially as it's the start of economic crisis and things, and my parents were pushing me to take any job that I could get.
Mm.
But it actually worked out really well, mostly because I talked to a lot of people before coming over to Canberra, and of course I'd already been networking within the Perth web industry, and so many people, they really, they definitely helped the transition, people being really friendly and helping, not just in a work sense, but just in terms of finding a place to live, finding good places to eat at, and a lot of just general advice. It was extremely helpful. People are very friendly.
Mm. So how did you find most of those people, just out of curiosity?
I had met a couple of the people who had come over to Perth for the Edge of the Web conference.
Edge of the Web, there we are. We've got to talk to those guys and get some sponsorship or something.
They're already paying me to fly over there and talk, so I think
I wish I'd done that.
Oh, well, I guess we owe them a little bit. You owe them a little bit.
Yeah, I actually probably do.
I've
seen the hotel, like the website of the hotel. There are rose petals on the bed. I'm not sure if that's the room I'm going to get. That's probably just from the picture.
It's
but nonetheless,
a honeymoon suite.
I doubt there'll be rose petals on the bed.
Yeah.
You should demand rose petals if there are.
I should.
Well, anyway, a couple of them came over and I started talking to them because I went to, I'm not sure if they do it here anymore, but Port 80 meetings. It's sort of a web industry. It's organised by AWIA, Australian Web Industry Association.
I need to become a member.
Hearing about those, but I
apparently really good.
Port 80
It started in Perth quite a few years ago, and just a big gathering at a pub. I have a couple of very short talks most of the time. Got some free pizza. because they have a membership. They have a bit of a fund for that kind of thing.
Oh, great!
Every now and then, if we got a sponsor, then we'd get free beer, and it was really, really good. And just generally networking, talking to people, catching up with people, and it was really great. Especially because I then got a lot of these people's Twitter IDs and started conversing with them on Twitter as well. So it was really nice to have that extra dimension. So it's not just online networking with people. You're actually seeing them face to face and talking to them, having a beer and a pizza. And it was really good.
Yeah, online's fine, but I think we're well past the days where just having an online relationship with someone, we're all geeks, but that kind of geek is gone.
To get clients, you need to network, and that includes face-to-face networking.
I think it definitely really helps. And it shows that you're putting in effort, that you're going to these kinds of industry events.
Mm.
So I think people respect that, and they feel your passion, especially when you talk to them about what you do, especially if they're also passionate about similar subjects.
Yep.
They see that, and they respect you for that, and then they forge you work. So that's always very nice to have.
Mm-hmm. Networking is everything.
Networking is everything. So, yeah, by Twitter, LinkedIn, go to conferences, if possible. Mm. Go to special interest groups like Port 80 or related events. Speaking if you can.
Do mailings. A podcast.
mailing lists are pretty good too. Business cards.
You always have business cards. If you're freelancing.
Yep.
Even if you're not freelancing, if you're working for a company, you should always have a business card.
Yep. Actually, we'll link up two places to get business cards in the show notes. There's moo.com, which is what I use, and you mentioned another service called...
It's by Qubit, but it's actually a trade printer, I think it is. So technically, you're supposed to be a graphic designer and have an ABN to order cards from them.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, definitely an excellent printer.
We'll put it in the show notes. So the benefits really over... of being a freelancer, you've got complete control over everything.
Yeah, which is really nice, because it's nice to be able to do everything my way, and there's not a huge amount of there's not much managing to do, because you don't have to check everything with somebody else or ask somebody else to do it and then check it or anything like that. It's just you've got control over it yourself. There's also a huge amount of freedom, which is really nice. If you don't control your schedule well enough, then you end up working crazy amounts of hours. But if you do, then you can actually have, work less and live more.
Yeah.
Which is what I've been trying to do lately.
Cool.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword, I find. I go through phases with my scheduling and time control. Sometimes I'm really good at it, and that'll last for about better part of a month. And then another month will come around and I'll totally lose track of what I'm meant to be doing. And I'm still trying to work out exactly why that is.
Mm.
But the months where I've got things under control are so much better than the months where I let things slip. Mm.
Slip as in too much or too little?
A lot of the time it turns out being that I've got too much on my plate and I've got so much on my plate that I'm not managing it efficiently anymore. I'm not taking the time to sit down and do proper to-do lists and schedule things.
God. Oh,
yes.
I couldn't live without them.
On the first day, God wrote his to-do list and then he switched on the lights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But important, I think, just a few tips and reminders, is it's still important to have a war chest, like a buffer of... Especially as a freelancer, I think.
Definitely. I would not have been able to
rely on anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is just your own personal funds that you're starting out with.
Mm.
And I mean, the startup costs if you're going to be working at home are actually quite low, but they're still there and they're still a significant. I bought a laptop, a printer, stationery, and I can't remember what else I got. Just little things like that, but everything adds up.
Was it a Mac?
Yes, it was a Mac. My first Mac, actually, and I'm converted.
I was like that too. Yeah. I had a friend who, my best mate Brett, met him at university, and he had a Mac. And
sorry, PC people.
No one here is a PC person.
Sorry, Windows people.
I use a Linux computer at home. I've got my Linux computer, and then my nice big screen that I attach my Mac laptop to.
I use, well, for my, I still use more Inkscape, so that better runs on Linux, on in GNOME, than anything else. It does run a bit on what's it, under OS X.
Sort of-ish.
It does run
under Windows.
That's worse than running it under. So my personal philosophy is, don't use Windows for anything other than maybe gaming. That's it.
And testing for clients.
And stabbing, and reasons to stab pins into my Voodoo doll. Yeah.
Mm.
That's about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Before we rat-hole any further, actually, as a side note, if you're going to work from home, I'm missing the office. I really liked having a dedicated place to work.
Yeah, me too.
Working, like, I work in my bedroom, basically, right? But that does suck to an extent. Because there's always a temptation to do something else. I mean,
yeah.
I have a machine, a PC under my desk, which has got games and recreational stuff on it.
Recreational stuff, eh? That doesn't sound wholesome.
It sounds really bad, actually, now that I think of it. No, it's just got games on it. That's
recreational
it.
Stuff.
That sounds actually really, really seedy and horrible. No, it's actually only got games on it. I wanted to detract from the games, and then I realized
are they recreational games?
No, it's mostly TF2 and the likes.
Okay.
Yeah. So working from home, there's always distractions to do something else, to not work, to take a break.
And you don't get that mental space.
That's the other thing.
There's no psychological segregation between this is my workspace and this is my home time space.
I'm really liking working from home, I think.
Do you have a separate room?
I have a room.
Bingo, that's the thing.
I don't think I could. I decided when we moved here, we have to have at least a two-bedroom apartment because I refuse to have my workspace in the same place as my bed or the dining table.
Especially,
or the kitchen.
Like, if you had a partner, oh my god, it would drive me nuts.
Well, it's not too bad. He kind of just plays his game and watches a soccer match on his computer. We're in the same room.
I'm just thinking if I had a partner that, like, in the bedroom, we both worked in the same. That could not work. That would just drive me nuts.
That would never
work. You need a separate room.
But because I have that separate place, it definitely works.
I've seen photos of it. It looks awesome.
Yeah, and I actually quite like it. I mean, it's quite small, but I get a lot of natural lighting, which I think is quite important.
Mm.
And it's my place.
Yeah,
and
I get none of that here.
and I can do what I like. At one point, because I do a bit of outsourcing for a local web company, and I went into work there for a couple of days a week just to see how it was, and it's a big, beautiful office, but I didn't like it as much as my nice little office. It wasn't my space. Also, it didn't have any windows, or no windows anywhere near where I was sitting, which it just felt a bit impersonal, and I actually felt more lonely there than I did at home by myself, so I don't know, I really like it. Possibly
working
in my pajamas.
So I'm working at the moment.
That's a plus.
Yeah, working in pajamas, that's a hell of a plus.
Yeah, well, I see a lot of people say that you should get changed for your work day.
Any clients that are listening, I put on a suit every morning, a shirt that's ironed, and special business pants, and that's how I work. I don't work in any other condition.
Admit it, you work naked. You work buck naked.
No, I don't.
If it helps you think better, then, you know.
If it feels comfortable, do it.
Fair enough.
So at the moment, I'm working for a government department, and I'm in a cubicle farm with people walking around, and I'm nestled in with the IT support people. So I get people coming in and asking questions of them all day. I've had to take big headphones to work with me just to get anything done.
The noise cancelling kind.
Yeah, I you know, there's just too many interruptions.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of natural light, and the other thing is I'm behind an awful corporate firewall that blocks.
Right. Use your iPhone.
I do.
Tethering.
I do. I have tethering. Screw you, Optus. I have tethering.
Me too. I decided not to go with Optus.
Do you have an iPhone now or not?
Yes, I do.
Woo!
And you didn't go with Optus. Well done.
Who'd you go with? I actually ordered with them and then I cancelled. I went with Three.
Cool.
Which worked out pretty
Training
well.
Training you well?
Me. Yeah, definitely.
How much did you pay a month?
$39 plan plus $10.
What's the weather like today?
I don't know.
Oh, lol, rat hole.
So yeah, corporate firewall, not much fun. Government department, risk averse. Everybody's very, very serious. I wouldn't recommend it.
Mm.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Mm.
Lovely people that I'm working with, don't get me wrong, but there is a lot of politics in the Australian Public Service. Go figure. I never would have thought.
Really?
No, yeah. Shocking, isn't it?
Wow.
And everyone's just deadly serious about their jobs.
Oh.
And there's not a lot of room for failure. So
you can't exercise your right to have lots of sexual jokes at work.
And well, strictly speaking,
the amount of abuse I got, I could have.
It wasn't abuse.
I could have signed a sexual workplace. What is it?
Oh, but you really? Loved it
from this man right here.
Oh wow,
loved it.
Uh
huh. Okay, now
this is my payback for the three episodes of.
It was blokey fun, you know. It was that's what Australian blokes do.
Oh, really?
Sexual harassment. Totally. Oh, all the time.
I didn't know.
It's completely normal. Oh, everyone does it. John Howard, with his staff, all the time.
Fair enough.
I see.
Yeah. I love the underwear you're wearing there, Mickey. Just like that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
I don't want to think of John Howard.
No.
That's a frightening image.
Ah.
Yeah, so,
Another rat hole.
Yes. The final things that we wanted to mention were, pricing. So, this is something that I had issues with.
I think everyone does.
How do you charge? What do you charge? How do you price yourself? How do you price projects?
Take a number that you think you're worth. If it's under $100, sorry, per hour. If it's $100, if it's less than $100, double it. Would be my first piece of advice. Your clients will tell you when you're not... Sorry, when you're charging them too much.
Mm.
They'll let you know, and they'll say...
you've got to be talking to the right ones. I mean, I don't charge very much. And to start with, I was charging really, really, really nothing.
Poverty rates.
Definitely. And I still got people telling me, oh, no, that's too much.
Can you really?
I've had what sort of rates are we once. Talking about?
Can we ask?
When I started just looking into freelancing, I went on the Freelance Switch job board,
mm-hmm.
and
I've seen that. It's good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's a lot of jobs there, so I applied.